state until all of our budget issues have been handled by the appropriations committees for last year. But then that's a good time to bring in somebody new, mm-hmm. because then they have time to get settled, and you don't really have to start the next budget cycle and all that until the fall. Well, that didn't happen, unfortunately, and I've been kind of distressed by that. But the fellow who was my deputy seems to be doing quite well. But it's different to have somebody who's there who really has the office and who can, you know, exert the kind of influence you'd like to see them do. So I've been sort of disappointed that they haven't done that. But like I say, the real issue, I think, is that 4 or 5 years of those. In fact, the job as the senior vice president for technology at Allied Signal was essentially a very intense time. And we had a new CEO. Bossetti came in about the second or third year that I was there. And, you know, really began to change the company and to really make demands on where you were going. And these are really intense jobs. And I think 5 years, 6 years is probably adequate. You may use up your best ideas.
What is the particular nature of your work here
now? Well, what we're in the process of doing here, and I have no idea how successful we're going to be. We're trying. The reason I'm doing this is that I have an old friend, Bill Bowen, who was the CEO of the First Commercial Bank, this bank building here. And he, during his tenure as the CEO of First Commercial, had worked with the state and with the community to do a lot of community things. He's always been very active in trying to build a community and a whole bit. And he had organized a thing called the National Advisory Committee for the State of Arkansas, which the bank financed and nurtured. And he asked me to be a member of that board back in the early 80s. And so I've been a member of it. It meets once or twice a year here in Little Rock. In fact, that was back in the days when Clinton was governor. And what he's tried to do is to bring at least one really important topic for this group to discuss and to have a report and put that out for the government, the state government, to use every year. And he has always wanted to start some venture capital activity here. There's been very little, and particularly not for startups and things like that. And the timing is pretty good right now. The University of Arkansas Medical School has about $50 or $60 million in research money now every year, and they've had that for 7 or 8 years, so they're beginning to build up a real cadre of people. They have a few world-class activities, one in geriatrics, the Children's Hospital here, and their pediatrics department, but their Children's Hospital is ranked in the top five in the country. So, you know, they're beginning to throw off some things that could be done. University of Arkansas in Fayetteville has an incubator up there that's doing quite well, has a number of companies in it, and they're beginning to move some of them out. And we actually have a pretty aggressive software service industry here. Alltel is headquartered here. Axiom is headquartered here. Several others of that sort. So there's enough activity now within the last 2 years, they have designated the part of the old Pine Bluff Arsenal as the National Center for Toxicological Research, and the FDA is moving all of its toxicological research base here. So you've got now a base at which you can begin to move some of these things. And so Bill Bowen had always wanted to do this, and so when it was clear we were coming back last June, I said, look, I'll make you a deal. If you'll get the investors put together, I'll come and review the technologies and do all that sort of thing and get the office up and running for you, and we'll see what we can do. So he managed to put we've got about 24 investors, and we're now looking for opportunities for things that we can do, startups and that sort of thing, to start that kind of activity here in the state. And it's an educational problem on both sides, because we don't really have the infrastructure that supports these little fledgling companies, and we're trying to get the universities to help with that, you know, the business school to help with business plans. And the small business group here never worked with technology-intensive companies before. We're trying to get that to work. So you've got all of trying to get the infrastructure activity going. At the same time, you've got to try to educate a group of investors whose own money has been made in banks and financial houses and development. I've got a couple that's not the case. Fortunately, I've got a couple. I have the fellow who was very instrumental in starting Systematics, which became Altel, who really knows and still plays in these venture capital things all the time. And another fellow who was a partner, I guess still is a partner, in Goldman Sachs, who has funded, not on himself personally, but through them, lots and lots of startups and things like that in his career. So we at least have a couple. But it's very hard to get these people to understand why, you know, the fact that, first of all, if you're going to do this sort of venture capital, you got to have a portfolio, because there's no way I can guarantee that any of these are going to work. And so it's hard to get them to be willing to put money, even though there is money, to have money. That's not the problem. And to get them to put it into these sorts of activities, still hard to do. So we're working on it.
Have you yet moved this particular agency into sponsorship of some new venture?
We have two on the table at the moment, which for, you know, for first year is not bad. One of which we're in actively raising money for, and I've presently got about half what I think is necessary to get it off the ground, and I'm going to see if I can get some more from outside. And the second is one that I expect to send them a letter outlining what I think they should do maybe today. So, and then we've got about two or three others that we're actively doing due diligence and looking at and what have you. So I think we're not doing badly, but again, people who are not familiar with venture capital think that's very slow, but it's not really, because you know, venture capitalists will look at 100 deals and make maybe 5.
Is your role to make the pitch for the inflow of capital?
Well, no, really my job with this group is, and I'm doing this on a pro bono basis, by the way, but anyway, my job in this, with the understanding I'm going to invest in some of them if we can get them up and going, but my job here is to look at the stuff that I can either generate, comes in over the counter or whatever, and also to look around to see what there is out there. You know, talking to the university, see if there's anything they have that they're okay, and then deciding which of those look like they'd be promising for us here in this state, and then working with that group to get a decent business plan put together that my executive committee can look at, and we have an executive committee, and then that executive committee decides whether or not we should pursue that or not. And if they choose to do that, then we'll do due diligence on it, be sure we understand where all the bodies are buried, and you know what kind of outstanding loans they have and whatever. And if that all then comes together and we can make a good enough deal with the people who own the technology or own the company, then we will put together an offering for our members. And then the issue is to sell that offering to them.
During the course of your long and varied career, your achievements have been recognized by several significant awards.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to comment on that record of awards, or do you want prompting about particular ones?
Oh, I don't know. I really do appreciate them, and there are times when I don't understand why they give them to me, but certainly some of them are more significant than others. Clearly, the Boyd Professorship was a very significant one. It was early on, had a lot of impact, which was, I guess, the reason why all of the nonsense that came up over the politics and the university, why that was so difficult was the fact that it was challenging whether or not you should have gotten it.
Mm-hmm.
And of all of the things that I've tried during my lifetime to do is to not take anything which I thought was because I was just a woman. And that was an underhanded pool, I thought. But but anyway, certainly the Boyd Professorship is one of those. The election to the National Academy of Engineering was really neat for a lot of reasons. And that was primarily because of the leadership and the technology issues in the industry. And one of the others, which is, you'll find kind of strange, but I thought was wonderful, was I was elected to the Swedish Academy of Engineering, which I find was just fascinating, because I've been to a couple of their annual meetings, and it's really fun. And I guess the Priestley Award from the ACS, I would have to say, is really is one of those things that's that one remembers and appreciates, because that is for chemists anyhow, that is a very prestigious award. And I must admit that this award, recent one from the Chemical Heritage Foundation, was totally unexpected and very, very pleasant. And in fact, I'm very pleased that they're doing that award. And I hope that they, you know, keep that going.
You're speaking of the Osmer, Gold Medal Award,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which was awarded just last month.
That's
I
right.
Believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have made reference a few times during the course of our conversation to your husband, mm-hmm. Bill, and mm-hmm. his very supportive attitude of all of your activities. You have other family members.
Yeah, I sure do.
Tell us something about your family.
Well, I have two sons. One that we talked about earlier, who was born when I was still a graduate student, and the other one, which I should have made reference to when we talked about moving to LSU in New Orleans, was born in September of 1958 when we moved into the when we moved into New Orleans. And one of the things that happened because of that was that I missed the first 2 weeks of school, and everybody had divided up the teaching loads, and the best I can tell what they decided they didn't want, I ended up with. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But both of them have turned out to be just wonderful people. I've been very pleased with them. The older one has a PhD in marine biology on the botany side from LSU, and is presently, as you know, the director for the wetlands programs of Louisiana, of which he absolutely loves the job and hates the politics, but which is not new or different. And he has two sons, one of whom just graduated from high school last week, who's going to Rensselaer in the fall. He's going up to RPI to do aeronautical engineering. At least that's where he's going to start. And his second son, my second grandson, will be a junior at Catholic High in Baton Rouge next year. And my younger son is an architect, graduated from Tulane. Spent he and his wife, in fact, it's kind of interesting, his wife is the daughter of Professor Ward, who was one of the best known geology professors at UNO. And they spent a year and a half, 2.5 years in the Peace Corps in the Philippines after she graduated from Brown and he graduated from Tulane, and they went to the Peace Corps. And that served them very well. They had a great time, enjoyed it a great deal.
Was he doing architecture-related work there?
Yeah, they did everything. They were assigned to some little island down south of Cebu called Sikior. And they did everything. They built an ice house. The fishermen down there had no way to keep their fish fresh to get to the mainland. So he designed and helped them build an ice plant. All the way from the generators and stuff they bought from Germany and the whole bit. And she started a library and all kinds of things for these. They did just about it. And they learned a lot, because in building this ice plant, he had to go to Manila to manipulate all of the legal issues and all that kind of stuff, and they've been, you know, ordering in and out and all this. So they really learned a lot by doing that. And he and his wife have two sons, the oldest one who's now 13. And they live in Madison, Wisconsin, and they moved to Madison when they got back from the Peace Corps because she wanted to go to graduate school in soil science. And so they were looking for a school that had that, and also a place where he could get a job as an architect, and they found that in Madison. And they like Madison a lot. It's a lovely community, and it's been just great. The schools are good, and the kids like it there. But he spent about 5 or 6 years as an architect, 4 or 5 of those as the architect for the University of Wisconsin, where he learned everything. I mean, you know, they built everything on those campuses, big campuses. And then he and a friend went out and put together a partnership. He had always wanted to do his own firm, which they did. And they got started doing some disaster work after Hurricane Hugo. They were asked to go down to the Caribbean for FEMA and evaluate the buildings down there and to give them back some feedback of what they should rebuild with, how should they rebuild and whatever. So they did that, and that apparently went very well. So they began to get some contracts from disaster agencies and things like that. So they, at this point in time, essentially do no architecture in the normal sense of the word, and they now run a major consulting firm that has about 6 or 7 permanent employees and another five or six that they keep on stringers as consultants. And what they do is they do disaster relief work all over the world, including major refugee issues. And they run workshops for non-governmental agencies and whatever. So he, as a high school student in New Orleans, was in that academic high school, and they taught Russian, which he took. He took 4 years of Russian, so he reads and writes fluent Russian. So there, they get sort of an edge on all of these disaster things that the State Department and Aid and United Nations and so forth does in the old Soviet Union, because the only Western language those people speak is Russian. So he's kind of the State Department's expert on Outer Mongolia, and does a lot of work in the stands, you know, Kazakhstan. And in fact, one of the neatest contracts that they've gotten recently is that they got the contract from the International Red Cross to help those particular those former Soviet Union republics to build a Red Cross structure, a national Red Cross structure for them. In other words, Kazakhstan would have a national Kazakhstan Red Cross, which they'd never had before. So they have the contract to help them build that, design that, and do it for those countries, which is really fascinating. So they do all sorts of things, and they do go to some bad places. But
you have four grandsons, I believe.
Yep.
You referred quite early on in your review of your career to the absence of women scientists, role models,
right,
when you were a student, and Madame Curie was the one that led you into radiochemistry. Well, you are such a strong role model for women of science. Is it kind of a pity that you don't have any granddaughters?
Well, that is true. I agree with that. In fact, my husband, I think, was even more disappointed about that than I was. He would really have liked to have had at least a grandchild, a granddaughter. But, you know, you go with what you get.
Yes.
And they're all healthy and reasonably intelligent, and that's good enough.
Good.
And they all seem to be, and like I say, and the boys in particular, I'm just real pleased with them. They've turned into be really good people, and they've turned into be good parents, and that's about as good as you can do.
Yes.
God, in these days, that's better than most.
They saw the role model and picked up on it.
Who knows? Who knows? But yeah, but it is also true that my husband's always, you know, has always been very supportive, and in fact, I think one of the reasons that the boys perhaps have done as well is that he's always been very hands-on with them as well, and that's made a difference.
But you've had this remarkably successful career in academia, in industry, in government service. It is seldom that a chemist combines success in all those segments,
right,
of the possibilities,
right,
for a chemist. As you look back on your career, is there a segment that you would wish you could have had a longer stay in, or did the division among the three segments about balance out the way you wanted?
Actually, I think it turns out pretty well, really. Like I say, I suspect the job I enjoyed the most was being vice president of research at UOP. But you know, those are like anything else. I was there for about 8 years, and you need to move on, frankly. But it's kind of fun. I'm actually consulting for them these days, so
mm-hmm.
That's kind of fun.
As you look back, when did you really make the transition from being an experimental chemist to being a manager?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's interesting about that. I think most chemists do that anyway, because whether they admit it or not. You do it slowly, certainly, but, you know, by the time you end up with three or four research grants from three or four agencies, 15 or 16 people in your group, your days of doing hand-on stuff is pretty far gone, okay? And I think that's true of most senior faculty. I mean, they don't admit it to anybody, but I think if you go in their labs and so forth, you'd find that's the case. They spend their time managing that portfolio. Now, it's not to say they don't put intellectual thought into the science still. I don't mean that, but yeah. I mean in terms of, you know, going on into the laboratory. In fact, most of them, by the time they get to that level, their graduate students would be absolutely appalled if they went into the laboratory. Frankly. So I think that's more common than not, actually, rather than the other way around. That's always been pretty much the case, except for the single inventors and folks like that, because in some ways that's appropriate, because you learn enough, if you've done it well, you learn enough over a period of time that your time is better spent in teaching young people how to do it and providing the input into what they think and whatever, because when you really come down to it, your success in all this stuff depends upon how good your graduate students were.
Is there anything you think of that needs to be included now to make the story complete? You've been very generous with your time on this interview.
Only a couple of things, I guess, that didn't get mentioned. One is that I did have a role model, as you very well know, when I went to LSU. Virginia Williams was there, which was a big help. People don't realize that, but Virginia was there, and she had been there all by herself for a long time, and had a lot of good wisdom to share, which was very helpful. Secondly, the other thing that made it work was that we were able to hire help in those days, too. We actually hired a housekeeper when I first went to LSU, because Billy was only 9 months old at that time. And the ability to have somebody who you trusted and that sort of thing take care of your children makes a huge difference. And in fact, I'm convinced the biggest problem that professional women have today is quality health care. It's hard to find. But on the other hand, as I say to some of them, you know, some of them moan about it and say, well, you know, it's just too expensive and all that. I said, it's not too expensive. Because we paid our housekeeper more than Bill made. And, you know, that's what you have to do. I mean, and I don't think people should bitch about that. That's the choices you make, and, you know, because if you're doing a career because you enjoy it and want to do it, the people that I feel sorry for with respect to child care are those who are at the bottom of the scale and really can't afford very much because they have to eat off of what they have. But two career families, in my view, is they can afford quality child care and ought to pay for it. Because that's the only way we're going to get good workers in that field is to pay a decent salary to people. Mm-hmm. But that's true. I did have a housekeeper who worked for us for quite a long time, and a wonderful woman who was very, very helpful. And I think, as it turned out, it was helpful to her. I think it was a win-win situation all around. But so those are really very important. And I guess the other comment I would make is that my siblings have all done extraordinarily well. My sister, who lives here in Little Rock, is medical director of Children's Hospital, the hospital I told you that is now in the top five in the country. And she came here when it was not the top five in the country by any stretch of the imagination. And has been president of the American Academy of Pediatrics and is probably one of the most widely respected pediatricians in the country. My second sister has a PhD in nutrition. Presently is director of the Delta Project that has South Arkansas, Louisiana, and Mississippi looking at the nutritional issues in that for the Department of Agriculture. And my brother, who is the youngest, just retired as the senior supervisor for the Western Forest for the U.S. Forest Service. And I think that most of that is because of our parents. My mother in particular was one of these people. She worked all of her life, taught school all of her life. Very, very bright lady, brighter than any of us, actually. Who really sort of instilled in us the idea that you could do whatever you wanted to do. And it never occurred to me, which is the interesting thing I find talking to other women, because it's not true for everybody, and I never understood how valuable it was. But it never occurred to me to even think about whether I could shift to chemistry or not. You know, it was exciting and it sounds like fun, so you just do it. And you know, when I got through and wanted to go to graduate school, never occurred to me to think about whether or not this was, you know, whether women did this or not. I mean, people don't believe me, but it's absolutely serious. I never thought about it. And I think that that was an unusual gift. And talking to lots of women who have not had that experience and who've had some real tough times making it, I think that's perhaps more important in the success than most people would believe.
Thank you very much, Mary, for a very generous time on your interview, and I'm certain that it will be valuable.
That's kind of pleasant, but it's an old friend, you know. That makes it easier.
Good.